smoked a cigarette the whole time.
It doesn't do it, Betty.
But it all says that you take care of the smoker as well as the non-smoker. Please have a smoking area for them.
No, Mr. Wagaman, Mr. Ringstead. Yeah, Wagaman got upset and left, I think. Yeah, well, that's the first one today.
First guy signed up and the last guy to hear, he said.
Thank you for coming to our table, Mr. Ringstead, would you?
Thank you, Jack. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate very much the opportunity of being heard here. I know that you put a lot of time in here the last couple of days. I've been with you. My main concern is the land swap. But I'd like to allude for just a moment to the porcupine caribou herd, since everybody's doing it. We had three experts testify on this herd, and one of them said that the big calving quarry was over in the east, where about 25% of the oil was. Another one said that it was over on the far west with the Canning River. And another one said that it was kind of all over the place wherever Mother Nature happened to call. So it's kind of hard to, really, I think, for you people to take this professional information and make some kind of sense out of it. I agree with Mayor Wally that eastern flock of preservationists are going to put a lot of stock in the caribou herd. And I think you have to come up with some sensible solution that's going to halfway protect them in order to get this through. I might as well say right now that I am for the development of Anwar under proper conditions. Everybody's for it. A lot of people have been saying that the last 2-3 days. I'm for development of Anwar. But you have to say to yourself, under what conditions? I'm concerned in this development with the land swap. Yes, the state of Alaska is going to lose their revenue through these land swaps, then I'd say that we'd be better off to leave the oil in the ground and not even develop it at all. Unless, like Bob Bettesworth alluded to, that the federal government could make the land swaps and still retain a federal royalty on those particular land swaps. Now, there's one thing that really bothers me with these land swaps, and that is that our congressional delegates in Washington seem to be supporting these land swaps that they know very well the people of Alaska do not support. Now, I would like to see you people give some credence to that committee that Governor Cooper sent back there to tell those people that the people up here in Alaska don't approve of these land swaps. And I think that committee should go to Congress and tell them not to listen to our congressional delegates, because they seem to be supporting the oil companies, not the people of Alaska. And let that committee tell Congress that the people of Alaska do not support the land swap. Now they say, oh, we have to have the land swap in order to get this through Congress. That's got to be the biggest lie of the year. That's all I have to say. I have a statement, or several statements here, that I'd like to just pass out to you for your perusal, if I may.
Thank you, Mark. Is there any questions of Mr. Ringstead? If not, thank you very much. Is Lane Thompson here? I believe he had a 2 o'clock on his, and he's gone. Dick Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Dick Bishop. I live at Gus's Grind in Goldstream Valley. With me is Larry Hannison, who's president of TVSA, the Tamanaw Valley Sportsmen's Association. I'm testifying as an individual on behalf of TVSA. TVSA, thank you for scheduling the hearing. At this particular time, it was nice of you to do it on the 50th anniversary of TVSA. I signed the incorporation papers 50 years ago yesterday, and TVSA has been putting on a series of events to celebrate that occasion this week and running into next week. And we'll say a little more about that later. Very well. TVSA dates back to... ...1915 and earlier. It's a conservation group dedicated to the wise use of natural resources. Incidentally, since economics is very much an element of the discussion here today, let me just point out that the Tamanaw Basin produces about $80 million worth of fish and wildlife. So that in itself is quite an economic asset in this with regard to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, TVSA was the first organization to publicly propose the establishment of the Arctic National Wildlife Range in 1957, before statehood, and they proposed that it be established to provide the continuation of the habitat for fish and wildlife in that area. And at that time, they indicated that was their principal interest. They also indicated that under appropriate and proper regulations, they saw no problem with mineral and oil development in that area. A little later on, in 1959, Jim Lake, then the president of the TVSA, testified at a Senate committee hearing on a bill to establish ANWR by statute. It had been established by executive order. And with your permission, Mr. Chairman, considering the occasion and the long-time interest of TVSA in that area, we'd like to ask your assistance in going through a little bit of the testimony at that time. That'd
be fine. I got my script here.
Okay, you have your script. Well, at this time, I'll turn it over to Larry Hanison, president of TVSA, and if you two would like to pretend you're 30 years younger and with a slightly different name, well, it might be interesting to see what the exchange was that regarding TVSA's view in 1959 when they were discussing the Senate Bill 1899 that was in Congress at that time. And as the script goes, according to my copy of it, Mr. Lake on my right started off.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am James M. Lake, president of Tanana Valley Sportsman's Association, Fairbanks, Alaska. I wish, as president of the Tanana Valley Sportsman's Association, to make a statement for that organization in support of S-1899 to create the Arctic Wildlife Range. The Tanana Valley Sportsman's Association, on May 14, 1957, made the first public proposal for the establishment of the Arctic Wildlife Range. We have consistently worked for the creation of the range since that date and wish to reaffirm our position at this time. We feel the previous testimony by Dr. and Mrs. Olive J. Murray, the Department of the Interior, the Isaac Walton League of America, the Wildlife Management Institute, the National Wildlife Federation, the Wilderness Society, and many other organizations and individuals adequately set forth the many basic reasons why the Arctic Wildlife Range is needed and should be set aside at this time. Without going into these many and varied reasons, we merely wish to point out that in our opinion, the American people have amply demonstrated their desire and need for wilderness values. This desire, we feel, is perhaps best demonstrated by the rapid growth in the number of visitors to our national parks, national forests, refuges, and ranges. And unfortunately, there already exists a shortage of elbow room in many of these areas for the visitors to find and enjoy the values they are seeking. In the Arctic Wildlife Range, we have an excellent and perhaps the last opportunity to preserve an especially beautiful, valuable, and unique portion of our country for the enjoyment and betterment of the future generation of our citizens. It is our further opinion that the Arctic Wildlife Range should be established as soon as possible in order that the scientific values represented there may be preserved in a relatively undisturbed state. Thank you for the opportunity to present our testimony.
And as the record goes, then Senator Bartlett asked, how long have you been a resident in Alaska?
15 years.
What is your occupation?
I'm a consulting engineer.
You have been in the range area?
I have not been in the range, sir. I have hunted to the west of the range and the Brooks Mountains, but I have not been in the proposed Arctic Wildlife Range.
Was the proposal first made to the TVSA for the wilderness area or for a wildlife range?
If I may, I would like to back up a little bit on that, Senator Barton, and try and trace the history of the proposal and the way the TVSA became interested in it. We heard of the proposal to create that which was called a Northeast Wilderness Area, I believe, in 1953 or 1954. At that time, there was considerable opposition amongst the club members to this for the establishment of such a wilderness area. At a further time, information began to filter down to us about the Arctic Wildlife Range. And
what do you mean, filtered down to you?
Reading the various magazines and the literature that's published in the conservation field.
Well, the reason I was interested in that, I had thought it was moving up from the Tanana Valley Sportsman's Association.
I will come to that in just a moment.
All right.
Sometime in the early part of 1957, 1947, the trustees of the Tanana Valley Sportsmen's Association felt that there was sufficient interest to warrant further investigation of the Arctic Wildlife Range, and we accordingly invited Dr. Murray to come from the States and present his thoughts on the range to the club. He did so on the night of May 14, 1957, and the club found his proposition favorable and endorsed the idea. And as I have stated in my testimony, we have been supporting it since.
Was Dr. Murray's presentation for a wildlife range?
Yes, sir.
Not for a wilderness area?
No, sir.
And did Dr. Murray recommend at that time that mining be permitted?
Yes, sir.
Does the bill now before us fairly represent the recommendations made by Dr. Murray then?
Yes, sir.
End of script. Very good. That was in October of 1959.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and as I recall, that bill did not pass Congress, but eventually, of course, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge was created based on the range earlier. But it seemed to us that, first of all, of course, we wanted to toot our own horn a little bit about TVSA having an integral part in that, and we thought that it might be instructive that some of that early record about what was being considered and agreed to at the time might be helpful. At the present time, TVSA is not... taken another look at their position in relation to the current proposals nor the resolutions in the legislature, but we will be doing that in the next month or so.
Would you let us know, please? Thank you very much.
Also, I guess the other thing we'd like to say is all of you would be more than welcome to the TVSA banquet this evening. It starts at 6:15 with food coming available about 7:15. And we'd be pleased and honored to have you there if you find that you don't have anything else to do.
At this time, I would also like to present each of you with one of our 50th anniversary commemorative pins.
Well, thank you.
Happy birthday, that's
oh, very nice. Thank you.
Born the same year I was.
All right, now we have Larry Anderson. Oh, you're on together. Okay. Scott Matthews.
Yeah. What's the location, man?
Scott Matthews. Royal Bidwell, he was up already, wasn't he? Scott, sorry.
Yeah, I'm here to oppose the development of ANWR. This should not be developed until we know how to maximize the benefit of that resource for Alaskans. I think a study should be conducted to see how over $10 billion of revenue has gone through the sieve in Juneau. Whether that oil money went down the tube because we allowed the oil companies to deduct new office buildings in Cleveland, or whether it went down the tube because we allowed them to deduct their Anaconda copper losses, or whatever loss we allowed them to deduct outside of Alaska, that loophole should be closed in the next development. Because when that's closed, that'll mean their office staffs, instead of supporting an economy and educational tax base in Cleveland or in California or in Texas, will support the North Star Borough and the Anchorage Municipal School System. Also, we got to see what happened in these out-of-court settlements where we settled with the oil companies that have cost us an estimated $5 billion there. We have also got this ELF problem, which Senator Coghill agrees is a complicated issue. I heard him on the radio last night talking about the ELF and separate accounting and saying before he could decide what to do with Prudhoe Bay, he needed another year to study it. So if he needs another year to study what's going on in Prudhoe on that tax issue, then I think we need a little bit of time to see how we're going to control Alaska's resource wealth in ANWR. We also have to figure out what we're going to do about transportation costs. They load that stuff in a boat, they ship it from here to there, they build their pipelines, they have their accountants tell us how much it costs to ship that oil, but we can't get the documents because of secrecy to see how much it really costs to ship that oil. Now, we got our 12.5% royalty, but when you take away the amount that they deduct for transportation costs, our royalty is nowhere near 12.5% when you get done. In other words, it's my opinion that this state has let enough money go through the sieve to build every Alaskan family of four a home. That's how much money was just given away. And we're not talking about improper spending, and I'm not talking about a great social program to build these houses for the Alaskans, because they can build their own, and they'd probably rather build their own. What I'm talking about is trying to give you, the general public, an idea how much money I'm talking about. Marlis, I think you found it true that when the oil people came in 1981 and they testified to you that this bill was revenue neutral, it turned out not to be the case. Not only did we leave a great amount of tax revenue on the table, as Hugh Malone testified and urged Governor Hammond to veto that bill, and he was very accurate. I can't believe he was within tens of billions of dollars 5 years out. That amazes me. I'm real impressed with Hugh Malone. So what we got to do is maybe make a study and close those loopholes and then see how to best benefit Alaska with that money. Because we let a lot go, and we could do a lot with that money. Just a small portion of that money right now would balance our budget. And then we wouldn't have Fairbanks teachers fighting Fairbanks businessmen over who's getting too much money. I think it's time we all work together as Alaskans to study this problem instead of letting oil people advise our political people how to vote and how to write our tax laws. I think we should write them ourselves.
Scott, I thought you might be interested in knowing that, maybe some others here, that at 3:30 on Tuesday, we'll be hearing SB 70, and that's the disclosure of state tax assessment, what we call the confidentiality legislation. I don't know if all of them people here as knowledgeable as you seem to be concerning the tax lawsuit issues, but one of the reasons that we are so interested in looking at trying to work out something on SB 70 is the fact that we cannot determine as a legislature. Agency people can see some of these reports, and they're under a confidentiality statute so that if they may have any leaks, you know, they can be punished, etc. But evidently legislators are not seen with that much credibility as an agency persons, and we are not allowed to see that type of information on which to make sound judgments. And so we'll be hearing that Tuesday at 3:30 if you're interested.
Hey, Betty, I'll come right in after work. I'd like to add that the development of Anwar could bring a lot of jobs to Fairbanks. And Prudhoe was going to do that, but last year was the biggest sea lift in history, and you saw what happened to the Fairbanks economy over the last year. And I cannot blame what happened to the Fairbanks economy on falling oil prices, because we have not yet felt what's going to happen when the state balances its budget. That's still a few months down the pipe. We got a touch of that. But what we lost last year was a pure cash injection into the money supply of the Fairbanks economy of imported wages. And a wage dollar is worth much more to the economy than a business dollar. And the reason is, when a dollar comes in for a wage, that dollar goes to the bank and you can loan it out. When a dollar comes into a business, a certain percentage, dependent on the markup, goes right outside of Fairbanks to buy the product that the businessmen marked up and sold. So what I'm saying is, let's look at this. It might be our last big oil field. Let's get our fair share for Fairbanks. Let's give Kevin and his oil companies their fair share, and we'll develop it when we can do that, and not until we get our fair share. Too many garage sales and moving sales.
Thank you very much, Scott. Appreciate your coming.
Yes, may I add again that that hearing will be Thursday at 3:30, and if the people of this area are interested in hearing it, we'll make a hookup for teleconferencing at the LIO, if you'll just let me know.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. Ron Yarnell.
Ron Yarnell. I reside at 1231 Sundance Loop here in Fairbanks. I am the owner of a small wilderness guiding business operating in the Brooks Range. I've been offering trips to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge since 1976. I'm one of thousands of operators that have led trips into Alaska's wilderness for the last numerous decades. Let's not lose perspective of what Alaska has to offer the world in our rush to develop the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. We have heard a lot of testimony in the last several days about the benefits of developing this area. But are we adequately giving consideration to what we may lose? Not only is there the potential that we may lose a significantly important wildlife resource, but we could be sacrificing one of the resources that we are presently, that is presently contributing to our economy, for another set of resources that may have a more immediate economic impact, but be of a more short-term nature. I have been there. I have led trips down rivers like the Hula Hula, the Congokut, and the Caney. I have led base camps for little old ladies to Schrader Lake and Peters Lake. I have led backpackers across the coastal plain that this committee is urging be developed. Further oil development on the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge will significantly affect my business and the business of numerous other guides and outfitters. It is not our businesses directly that I am concerned about as much as it is the tourist industry in Alaska in general. As most of us know, tourism is one of Alaska's major resources. It has been around long before oil development occurred here in Alaska, and if we take proper care of our wilderness, wildlife, and scenic resources, we can continue to benefit from them. If we do not take care of these resources in our rush to develop Alaska's petroleum resources, we may find that, like the permanent fund, we have dwindled it away until we won't have anything left to fall back on after oil and minerals run out. I get a very distinctive feeling this committee is getting an extremely one-sided viewpoint of what Alaskans want. Most Alaskans want to protect the wilderness, wild, and wildlife resources of our state, resources that it is so famous for. I urge you to use the enthusiasm you have shown to develop Alaska's non-renewable resources to protect the resources like wilderness, wildlife, and scenery that will continue to provide jobs and stimulate the economy long after the non-renewable resources are used up. I oppose the proposals you have presented before the legislature, and I urge you to hold off on development in the wildlife refuge until we can adequately decide if it's going to have other impacts, economic impacts on some of the rest of us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ron. Sarah James? Sarah? Arctic Village.
Depend on caribou as our daily diet. And also, tourism. They said tourism is going to be a long-range economic for Alaska. Earlier I said that we were between the two cultures, from Washington all the way up into the Alaska frontier. And let's just save that part for national interest, national recreation. Tourists and tourism want to last longer than the oil would. And also, through the history, another thing they talk about is that, and the land was already, the damage way back when the fur trafficking, when they used poison for animals, it's just now regaining its abundance. It's because that Arctic wildlife refuge came through. That was back in the 60s. So stuff like this will really take time. And again, I'll say I'm not for the development. I guess I have said. Oh yeah, I'm about the international issue on. That would include the tourism internationally. It would be interested internationally. And another thing is that the caribou is international issue too, because the whole area uses it. The people are originally from Arctic Village area, and then when the non-Indian came around, then they split up. They went to where the trading posts and all that. They scattered around, and the caribou numbers down. Caribou even avoid going to Eagle Summit and part of Yukon Flat and over to other side of Canada around Fort McPherson. So then there's really been a change in the movement of the caribou and the numbers of the caribou. So I just can't believe when they say that it's just a cycle that kicks. And then, and last, since the North Slope, we didn't see any change. Hardly any people got hired out of our village. And the price of oil and gas never changed. I haven't changed very little. We've been paying $25 for $25 for 5 gallons of gas and a quart of oil with it. And maybe we could get 5 loads of wood with that. That's the Bakken load. I'm not talking about quart. And each quart of wood is about 10 pieces and 10 inches in diameter, the largest one. And that load would cost an individual $30. And it's still $30 yet. But that $25 went down to $16. So that calculation don't tell me that it's benefiting Alaskan. So that's all I can say. Thank you.
Thank you
very much,
sir. Yes.
Just a comment, Ms. James. No question. But you said that you weren't used to appearing before groups, and I think you've represented your people very well. And I can, my visit to Venatai, not your village, but it came through you. You did very well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom Scarborough.
Good afternoon. I'll try and be fairly short here. I'm Tom Scarborough. I live in 1676 Trophy Drive in Fairbanks. I've been arrested for 20 years. That's supposed to add something. A little bit of history. I'm currently chairman of the Fairbanks Fish Game Advisory Committee. I'm past president of TVSA, past president of Alaska Outdoor Council. However, today I'm speaking as an individual. I'm also a registered land surveyor and engineer, and have traveled literally all over the state in the last 20 years, including the Arctic. I've got three concerns, but at first I would like to commend the committee for the patience they've had to hear this. And it is so welcome to have somebody that is willing to try and get to the bottom of this whole issue. I have this sixth sense that we're just not getting all of it. And when we start hearing about secret negotiations or this, that, and the other thing, that concerns me to a great deal. We're dealing here with resources worth literally billions of dollars. And involved in this is 1991 amendments, secret land trades, with the possibility for individuals and institutions to benefit incredible amounts of detriment of Will Atkins and other citizens. That's why I'm here today. Okay, maybe this is better. I've been involved over the years with some of the national environmental organizations, and I've had firsthand experience in dealing with them. I was very active, too, during the D-land issues, and I think I understand the national environmental organizations. They will be adamantly opposed to any development in the Arctic. They will not be opposed also to using unethical methods of trying to stop any type of development. I've got experience in that area with them. Unfortunately, from our side, we have got to do things proper and put forth the proper information. One of the concerns I have is that the caribou issue here is what I'll call a red herring, and it'll be brought before the committee many, many, many times, and it'll be trying to divert the real issues that we must consider. We've got to look at the national benefit of the oil and gas from what may be in Anwar, and we will only be there, if we look at history, a short period of time. All we have to do is mitigate the circumstances for the 10 years or whatever it'll take, 15, to take the oil out of the area. And what will we do with it afterwards? Will we turn it back to its original state? This must be considered. The other thing to be considered is the land trades. We keep talking about core caribou areas. What happens if that is one of the areas that's secretly traded away? Somebody should take a hard look at that. We don't know as the public which areas are being considered, but we can guess that it's the prime areas. If 25% of some number of billions of dollars worth of oil is in this so-called core area, I fully suspect that that is one of the areas that may be considered to be traded to private land. Who's going to take care of these caribou if it is private land? Now, I also want to bring to your attention that I have heard no words whatsoever from the national environmental groups opposing the land trades. I haven't heard any testimony. Maybe you have. I have not. And you might wonder why. You ponder that question. If they're so concerned about the caribou, why are they not concerned about some of this land going into private hands? Anyway, I wish to support SR 13 and 17. I have not studied the other two resolutions. I'm concerned about the caribou agreement, the Works Bank caribou agreement with Canada. That has been handled without the input of statewide conservation groups. Okay, you look at the list of where the information is sent. Not on that list is TVSA. Not on that list is the Alaska Outdoor Council, the umbrella group. Not on that list is most of the organizations in the state who should be concerned and who have great interest in the porcupine herd. There are more interests than just a few villages that are involved. This is a statewide resource worth millions and millions of dollars. And I've been involved with draft treaties for the caribou for the last 10 years. But lately, this has all gone elsewhere. And that treaty, that agreement, could have grave implications as to the development of Anwar if it's allowed to proceed. This committee, all I'm asking is you take a very hard look at that. Anyway, with that, I'll stop. If you've got any questions, I'll be happy to come in.
Anybody have any questions? We certainly thank you, Tom. That was excellent. John, Edgar, Sport for you? Is that, I guess, sport figures? Labor, paint, plant. This is it?
Not relevant to the issue at hand, so I asked you to be during the break to be read at an appropriate time for convenience. My name is John Edgar Swartfigure. I live at 324 Mini Street. I'm urged to attend by my roommate, who is a right-wing conservative Republican, who's involved with the issues at hand and somewhat informed me on the things that I missed yesterday during the speakings. And I would just like to say that I also commend this panel, the merits of hearing so much testimony, probably a rehash of much of what you hear throughout the week, but I don't think it's any less significant that each individual feels a part, voicing their pertinent point in the issues at hand. So from somewhat apathetic politically, probably not. I would say that it served as a format to inform the public, and hopefully not to over-inform. I agree with the one gentleman that said his knowledge was actually was a binding force trying to do up in Arctic Village. This mentality that we can psychologically analyze the disposition of terror is somewhat India's treatment of the cow. Like we're negating the issue at hand, the weakness of Alaska and the local community, looking at animals and ecosystems and big playgrounds being preserved, which I don't have any odd against that. I just believe we need to use the small portion that have a lucrative prospective value to this community and go ahead and develop those or attain the exploration rights as go ahead and begin to work on that now, as another gentleman said, that instead of waiting for some prices, elements will be done more in a hasty manner. Not after where we're somewhat still on top of the situation. Average middle class citizen, I'm feeling the concerned representation. Say that we do have the opportunity to share here. Take a second here to think if I had anything else to say. I had it all down.
Yes, it was, wasn't it?
I think it was pretty well covered by the companies spoiling possible spoils that Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. Very good. Very good. Our next witness is Gary Atwood. Gary? Finally. Sorry, but I hope we educated you a little bit, Gary.
Could probably tell some terrible stories. My name is Gary Atwood. I'm the Hampshire local 959, a 35-year resident. As far as caribou goes, I spent about 18 months up in the headwaters of the Colleen River one time back in the early 50s, and I am aware of the herd up there, and but I do think that can be handled up there, hopefully. That isn't what I want to speak about, because my prime concern is what I consider a natural resource that's far more important, and that's the working resident of the state of Alaska. Our position is, and you're probably well aware, organized labor, the FLCIO and Teamsters have already gone on record in Washington, D.C. opposing the opening of ANWR and the development of ANWR. This remains our position and will be until we get some kind of guarantees. And this is union or non-union. We want Alaskan bona fide, not the 30-day wonders, bona fide Alaskan residents who have lived here, are living here now, and plan on continue to live here, work at fair and decent wages in any further oil development in the state of Alaska. That is our bottom line. I don't think we'll waver on that. If we don't get some help in this area, I think what's going to evolve is some type of a coalition of organized labor, environmentalists, Canadians, and whoever else it takes to stop the further development. Nobody could ever accuse the Teamsters, the most organized labor, of being anti-development. We've gone along with that for quite a few years now. We've regressed to the point where I don't think the level of dignified wages are being paid anymore. The wages in the state of Alaska are mostly based on what organized labor has or where they're at. It's on a downward spiral. We hope to halt this by some type of unified action. We hope we're being heard. That's our position this time. All I can do at this time is take state our opposition to all the resolutions. And we want to thank you people for your time. We hope something comes out of these hearings, and that's probably... Do you have any questions?
Senator Durden.
I guess a comment or a question. I'm not sure which, Gary. Sure. But if you're looking toward the environmentalists, the Canadians, how about another strategy on your part that might be attempting to form a liaison with such as general contractors, such as the oil companies, such as the business community that says, you know, you got some friends there too. And there ought to be a way again for those of us here to work those things out. I mean, sure, we can just line up over here and line up over here, but that ain't going to solve our problem.
Confrontation, and I agree, is not, hopefully would not be the answer. We, as organized labor, I think I can speak for most of organized labor, and especially our union, have gone out of our way to try and come into some type of unified support for development as long as the working people got their fair gathered in court. We haven't stopped that. We haven't changed our position. We're willing to do that and work in that area. I do not agree with some of the testimony I heard now that we should get this development going and then hope to get fair treatment afterwards. Our track record of dealing with the oil companies, we understand if you don't have them where it hurts, or I should say, unless you maintain your leverage, you do not, you're not in a very good bargaining position. We intend to stay that way this time. Development for just development purposes only, we're not buying that anymore because we know where we were, we know where we are now. The oil companies were glad to have us when we were building. It takes so much to make a living and support a family, make a house payment, buy a car, go out to dinner. And there's got to be a level there. We are below that level and going